Rob Hubbard has been involved in e-learning since 2001. Since then, he has delivered a diverse range of online learning projects, from e-learning courseware to assessment games to bespoke learning systems. An integral member of the e-learning community, Rob is the founder of Learning Age Solutions and is also the chair of the e-learning network. We spoke to him about what makes a really effective piece of e-learning content and asked him to share some of his design tips. With different parties offering different definitions of the term e-learning, we began our conversation by asking him to explain what exactly it means for him.
E-learning is electronic learning, so it's any way that you can deliver information or training material electronically to someone. So absolutely, courseware, the sort of stuff that you create with an e-learning author tool, you might host it and run it and track it from your learning management system. That is a form of e-learning, but just one. I'd also include things like web video, web conferences, mobile learning, serious games, informal learning, using social networks, knowledge networks, even blogs, wikis, all of this kind of stuff I count as e-learning. And I think it's really important that we have that broad definition of it, because if the only thing you think of whenever somebody comes to you with a business requirement or a training need, if your default response is, oh, we need to build a course on it, you may be being effective, you may build a really fantastic course that does what they want it to, but you're not necessarily being as efficient as you can be.
Could you share for us, Rob, the process that you go through when you begin an e-learning project?
The first thing that we'll do is start gathering information and scoping out what this thing is that we need to put together. And I always hesitate to say that it's a course, because it may not be a course that's the right solution for that particular requirement. So part of that is learning about the users and really putting yourselves in their shoes and empathizing with them, trying to find out not just things like the kind of technologies that they use, but, you know, what are the challenges that they face? What are their levels of knowledge? What's their access to technology? How time poor are they? When and where are they going to be learning and putting this stuff into practice? And we also look at the tools that our clients are already using. So do they already have some kind of social network? Do they already have an authoring capability? Do they do anything with mobile? Do they have a learning management system? You know, what are the things that are already there in place? And what we tend to do is then build on those rather than suggest something completely new, so that it reduces the kind of cost for them. And also it gives them more control, because the stuff that we create, they can then edit and maintain themselves. And then a really key part of the whole process is working out from a performance perspective and from a skills perspective, what are we aiming for? What does best look like? What's the performance level that we're trying to get our users to? And we typically do that by working with the subject matter experts, or finding somebody within the organization, or often several people within the organization, who really excel at doing that particular thing, and find out from them, okay, so how do you do it? What makes the difference in your performance compared to your peers? And we model that. And sometimes that can be a really big piece of work. So for a client of ours, Tarkett, they're either the largest or second largest flooring manufacturer in the world. They thought they wanted product training, and what we explained to them was, no, in fact, what you want is to sell more products. So we designed a solution to do that. And part of that was meeting with their top salespeople from across Western Europe and finding out from them, okay, so how do you sell your products into these different segments? And we modeled all of these up on these great big flow charts. And then the really tricky thing was, okay, so what the common areas between these, you know, what, you know, with Tarkett came up with, this is the way that they want their salespeople globally to sell, and then come up with what best looks like. And then we design a solution whereby people can practice doing that and learning those skills, but in a safe environment, in ways that they can go through the same decision-making process, get realistic feedback. So it's not a case that if you ask the wrong question, you get a big red cross. If you ask the wrong question, well, you don't make the sale, or perhaps you irritate the customer for whatever reason because you've missed out on their key requirement. So you try and model what happens in the real world and then get as close to that in whatever format you're delivering the training in. And then we tend to get the knowledge element to people as directly as possible. So we don't spend a lot of time building fancy animated things for people to click on the dancing penguin to learn about sales technique. We spend the development time and effort building the simulations, and we get the material across to people as directly as we can do. And then very importantly, we need to work out how we're going to measure the success of this thing. So for the project, what does success look like? And how are we going to know when people have achieved this level of performance? What effect is that going to have on customer service, on sales? And then trying to dig and get to the metrics that are going to allow us to measure that, and putting some kind of strategy in place for measuring the success. So all that happens before we've sat down and built anything, you know. So it's you need to do quite a lot of thinking and research. But that means that when you do come to build the stuff, you're much more targeted in what you're going to put together. So you're not building flabby, overly long pieces of content or needless systems, or building things that they already have or things that they're not going to adopt for cultural reasons. You're much more likely to get off on the right foot then. And of course, we always involve the stakeholders in the design process, and the most important stakeholders are of course the users. So you need to involve them pretty much from the word go in your designs and in your research as well. And using them as a sounding board means that when you do actually build the stuff and you do the user testing, it means that you don't get any nasty surprises. It doesn't need to take a long time to go through the process, but you certainly need access to the right people.
As someone who has worked on a number of different types of e-learning projects, what would you say that e-learning is particularly good for? And when would you perhaps think twice about using it?
It works very well for just-in-time learning, for stuff that people can access when and where they need from potentially whatever devices that they have as well. I think e-learning is awesome at IT system training. You know, I think there's a real kind of best practice way of doing that, which is pretty tough to beat, really. For things where it's not so good, I tend not to use e-learning courseware approaches for things that involve getting people to challenge their values and their beliefs about things. So what you might refer to as hearts and minds type material, where people are going to be quite resistant to it and need to ask a lot of questions and need to discuss things a great deal. So for the really more kind of personally challenging things that challenge people's beliefs, I think it's pretty hard to beat a classroom environment. I also really don't think e-learning is good for just knowledge transfer. I often hear people saying that they want to start using e-learning or they want to design a blend, and they'll just use the e-learning to get across all of the knowledge element. That doesn't work. We don't have flip-top heads. You can't just pour buckets full of knowledge into our brains and we recall it and remember it forever. It's incredibly difficult getting people to remember anything. We all know that. We all forget our PIN numbers and our passwords. So just because you stick it up online and you put it in a bit of courseware, you put it in a system, it doesn't mean that people are going to learn it and retain it. So I think that's a real simplification. It's definitely something to be avoided.
Okay, I'm an L&D person and I want to get started with e-learning. What are some of the questions I should be asking myself and the factors I should be considering before starting anything?
I think you need to consider if it's right for you, because it's quite a particular set of skills that you need. I mean, if you're coming from a training background, then you're probably pretty interested in the way that people learn. You probably know a bit about how the brain works, and certainly you need a bit of knowledge about that. It's not about using the tools, because I think it's just so dangerous that people just go, oh, so I can import a PowerPoint presentation. Excellent. There's a 150 slide PowerPoint deck that I use for my training. I'll pepper it with multiple choice questions, put in some click to reveal interactions, and hey presto, there's my course. I've created it in a day. That's not e-learning. And is it something that you'd actually enjoy doing? I mean, I've met people where they work for large organizations where they can't continue doing face-to-face training. It's too expensive. So they've bought a license for an author tool. Then they realize just how much effort and time is involved in producing something that is actually effective. The other big thing is, do you have the time? It's going to save you time in the long run, but initially you're going to need to spend a good heap of time learning to do this stuff and actually producing it as well. And not just the time building it, but the time reviewing it and project managing it and looking after budgets and working with your stakeholders and working with your subject matter experts and doing the user testing. You know, all of this, it's a really important part of the process. At worst, if you're creating poor material, it can turn people in your organization off e-learning. So you need to ask yourself, do you have the time to do it? Do you have the time to get it right? people can produce really effective materials themselves, but you've got to get out of this paradigm of I need to produce courseware. If instead you focus on producing things like, well, like we're doing here, a podcast where you ask an expert for their tips on doing something, fantastic. If you've done that podcast or shot that bit of video, you can transcribe that, you can use that in different formats, in different bits of content. People can download it, they can view it offline. If it's a document, they can print it off and use it as a job aid. And that way you're creating all of this really useful stuff for people that they can use. And that is without needing to sit down at an e-learning author tool. You can shoot video with probably the phone that you've got in your pocket. You can learn a few tips on how to do that more effectively in an afternoon looking on YouTube or Vimeo, looking at the tutorials. And so long as the integrity of the content that you're getting across, so long as it's valuable, useful content, who cares if it doesn't look like Steven Spielberg has produced it? If people appreciate that content is valuable, it's useful to them and relevant to them, then that's surely more important than the production value. So I think people can produce stuff internally, but don't expect to achieve the same production values as companies that you may outsource to.
So if someone does decide to outsource their e-learning production, what are the crucial things to look for when considering a supplier? And the key questions to ask potential suppliers to help choose one over another?
I mean, I'd certainly look at their pedigree. So how long they've been around, what sort of people do they work for, what kind of work do they do, how do they approach their projects? You know, do they approach them with a blank sheet of paper, or do they turn up to the first meeting with a solution already in mind? You know, the former is certainly better than the latter. How do they work with people? So what kind of feel do you get from them? How collaborative are they? If you want to do more for yourself, are you able to do that? Are they just kind of turning up and selling you the stuff that they do, or are they able to be an extended team of yours if that's something that's important to you? I mean, another key thing is just, how do you get on with them? What are they like personally? Do you enjoy being around them? Do you find them easy to talk to? Do you find them easy to understand? Do they use your language? All of these kinds of things.
Okay, so alternatively, I may decide that I do want to produce the e-learning myself. To help with this, many people decide to buy an authoring tool. What do you think are the main things to consider when choosing an authoring tool?
I mean, certainly things like, how many people do you want to use it? How are you going to work with it within your organisation? So do you want a team of people who are authoring the material pretty close together? Do you want to have people spread out across your organisation authoring and doing that perhaps collaboratively? If that's the case, that kind of steers you more towards online author tool, something that people can access through a web browser that sits on a server somewhere. Usually it's hosted by somebody externally. So that can have benefits as well. And what kind of quality and what sort of material do you need to produce? For example, if you need to train people in using an IT system, if you get really good at using a bit of screen capture software, you know, something like Jing or Screener, you can do a huge amount with those, and they're free. And you can learn to use them in an afternoon. You probably want to use a decent microphone. But that's a really effective way of producing IT system training, and you don't have to pay a load of money for an author tool. If you do want to produce more kind of courseware, then certainly I would also think of, how technically able are you? Have you used anything similar before? Because the more you can do with an author tool, the steeper the learning curve. The simpler author tools, things like Articulate, for example, are great for allowing people to produce pretty reasonable content, pretty reasonable looking content, at least to begin with. But what you will find is that you'll reach the limits of what you can do with that pretty quickly. Whereas something like Captivate, for example, is much more feature rich. There's a lot more you can do with it, but there is a bit more of a learning curve for that. So when I'm advising people on choice of author tools, is don't think of, you know, this is the one that we're buying and this is what we'll have forever. Think of it in terms of, this is probably the one that we'll have for the next 2 years. And then at that stage, we'll look at how we've developed and what we want to achieve, and we'll reconsider our options at that stage.
Rob, what to your mind makes a great piece of e-learning great?
I mean, for me, it's not about the graphics or the media or the technology, or even how it looks. You know, it's great if it looks great, but the single most important thing is that it makes a measurable difference to people's performance, so that actually it is changing something. You know, it's moving you towards something that the business wants to achieve. That is, I think, absolutely key and often missed, because people don't measure what they do. There's very few people that will measure the effectiveness of any form of training, really, that they do. It's enough that people go, having been through it, they fill out the happy sheet and go, yeah, that's pretty cool. Or, yeah, I like that trainer. They were a nice person. You know, hey, they got 80% or above in the quiz that they've just done. That's kind of enough for them. But, okay, they may have enjoyed the experience and they may have kind of got it and remembered it that short period of time afterwards. But actually, has it made a jot of difference when they've got back to their jobs, their desks, and they've started trying to do this for real? Have they implemented any of it? I think you'll probably find that people will manage to implement a very small fraction of the useful stuff that they go through. You know, that's a big frustration of mine, that we spend so much time and effort on this initial learning intervention, whether it's a workshop experience or whether it's a piece of e-learning courseware or whether it's some kind of learning system. It's all about the initial delivery. But we know from studies in neuroscience, and we also know as individuals and as humans, we forget things very rapidly and we forget a lot of it. And also the brain, it lies to us. You know, it makes stuff up. So it pays a lot more attention to things that align to our beliefs and values. And it pretty much ignores and forgets things that don't, which is why if you have a particular point of view, you're always bumping into people with that same point of view, or you're finding evidence that backs it up. The brain is a bit of a slippery so-and-so, really. So in terms of getting people to put this stuff into practice, you need to give them more support, and it, you know, you need to be able to measure it somehow and demonstrate that actually this thing has made a difference.
Okay, and on the flip side of that last question, what do you think the classic mistakes of e-learning design are?
I think the number one, and I mentioned this briefly earlier, it's got to be information dump. It's got to be, let's just stick all the knowledge stuff in there. You know, let's import that PowerPoint. Let's publish it out as Flash. Let's use it as a dumping ground for knowledge without any thought of whether that knowledge is actually useful or relevant or is going to cause any performance improvement for the people going through it. So I think that's got to be the number one cardinal sin. And it can be very, not easily avoided, but with a little bit of knowledge about something like Kathy Moore's action mapping process, you got a fantastic methodology there for sifting through that big heap of content that you think may be sort of important or maybe somebody should know about it somewhere, and getting to the really key bits of knowledge that support the activities that help people learn the new skills. So I think that's got to be one of the worst ones. The other one is really great looking e-learning. Stuff that looks fantastic can be really ineffective, and stuff that looks really dreadful can be really, really good. So it's very difficult for, I don't think you can't judge a piece of content on its face value. I think you have to use it and try it out and see, well, actually, have I learned anything from it? Have I done anything different? Has it improved my skills? And that's much more difficult for people to measure. It takes more effort. And certainly when you're trying as an organization, if you're looking at options from a supplier, you're going to want something that looks the business. You know, you need to sell it to your senior stakeholders. But just because it looks great doesn't mean it is great.
If we could just concentrate on e-learning courseware for a second, Rob, it seems to me that it was once considered quite forward-thinking and dynamic, but now a lot of people consider it more as another push type of formal learning and think of it as unexciting in comparison to other digital learning methods such as mobile or online social learning. What do you think is e-learning courseware's place in today's learning environment?
I think it's diminishing. As I said earlier, I think it has its place. I think it can be useful for certain subjects and certain audiences. But overall, I think it's becoming a less important, smaller piece of the overall puzzle. And I think that's a real healthy thing because it takes a lot of effort to produce. It takes a lot of time. And without it being very carefully designed, all of that time and effort and money can be wasted, really. And even more importantly, the time of people going through it has been wasted. Whereas I think that now the way that we use technology at home and the way that we connect socially, I mean, you're probably like me, you've got Twitter accounts, you've got LinkedIn, you've got Google+, but we've got all of these means of connecting to people, and we use these social networks like, you know, Facebook on a daily basis, and we share ideas and we share knowledge and we share media. You know, I don't think there's any way that we're not going to be embracing that more in the learning side of things. The other areas that I think are growing is game-based learning as well. I think that's got a huge amount of potential, mostly because as humans, we learn through trial and error. You know, we've learned through trying something out, observing the results, thinking about what we could do different, trying it again and seeing what the difference is. You know, experiential learning. We didn't always have courses of stuff that we can push into the front of our brains and then magically think that it stays there. We learn through trial and error, and that's something that games do very well. They give somebody a reason to do that repetition, and we know that in order for people to remember stuff, you've got to repeat it. And repeating it doesn't necessarily mean learning it by rote and repeating it as we all learn our times tables at school. You know, you can repeat things through going over it again and trying a different approach or trying it in a different situation. And I think game-based learning is fantastic for that. My frustration is the expense of putting those things together, but I think that is going to come down. I think there's a number of people that are working towards that. So I think overall, you know, courseware, it's an important part, but I think there's other equally important, if not more important, parts to e-learning as a whole.